Okay, darling.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. This is Representative Bill Huizenga calling you on a live telephone town hall this evening. We are in the process of dialing across the district. We've got numbers of people that are joining us as we speak. And again, this is U.S. Representative Bill Huizenga calling you on a live telephone town hall meeting. I'm in Washington, D.C. We just finished voting a short while ago and wanted to spend an evening with you for about an hour or so. Understanding your questions and what you want to know about, letting you hear about my trip to Afghanistan and some of the other things that we've been dealing with. So as we've got people jumping on this call, you're going to hear me repeat myself a little bit here at the beginning, but this is U.S. Representative Bill Huizenga calling you on a live telephone town hall meeting. It's amazing technology that we're able to use to reach out to literally tens of thousands of people and this evening, and we're going to be having a series of poll questions, instant polling questions, where you are going to be able to respond and give me some feedback on some important issues. And for those of you joining us, this is U.S. Rep. Bill Huizenga calling you on a live telephone town hall meeting from Washington, D.C. We are dialing up and down the 2nd District Congressional District right now, and we've got literally thousands of people that we are contacting this evening, and we want to hear from you. In the meantime, if you are interested in receiving our electronic newsletter, you can do so by pressing 7 right now. If you press 7, you will be put in contact with one of my staff members. We'll be able to take your name and your email, and we'll make sure that we add you to our list. The list does not get sold. It doesn't get used for any kind of marketing other than our official business here in the Capitol and in the district. And it's our way of keeping in touch with you. And frankly, you save us postage, which means you save yourself tax dollars. That is one of my goals as well. So for those of you jumping on, this is U.S. Representative Bill Huizenga on a live telephone town hall meeting. And we want to hear from you this evening, your thoughts, your concerns on some of the pressing issues of the day. We want to encourage you to sign up for our electronic newsletter. You can do that right now by pressing 7. And if you do get into the line this evening, and we are not able to get to your question, we will be able to leave us a message and we will get back to you. So if you have anybody has any questions, please press 0 now to ask your question. You will be put in a queue where my staff, both here and in Michigan, who are manning the phones, will take your question, and they will get that question to me over the computer, and we'll be able to dial you in. So lots of stuff has been happening at the end of the year. I was honestly quite disappointed in how specifically the Senate had reacted to the extension of the unemployment insurance, to the extension of the payroll tax cut, and how we were going to pay our doctors and medical providers when what's commonly referred to as the doc fix out of Medicare, how we were going to reimburse them. And the House of Representatives had put forward a one-year solution for both the unemployment insurance as well as the payroll tax cut, how we were going to offset those within the budget. We had a two-year solution dealing with how we were going to reimburse healthcare providers, and unfortunately the Senate decided that they were going to do a two-month stopgap and return after the holidays and deal with it. And I felt very strongly that we needed to deal with that now. And we are running up on a deadline, and a number of those issues are being dealt with. So as we are starting to get some questions in, please press 0 if you have a question, and we would love to get to you as well. So I'm going to give you a very brief update, and then we're going to get to some questions here. We've got some great questions coming in. So I also had a great opportunity a few weeks ago. I took a very quick trip to Afghanistan. I had not been to Afghanistan. Many of you will recall that I traveled to Iraq earlier in the year in May, and I wanted to fulfill my promise to you all that the first two trips that I would take anywhere were to go and see our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. I think those are two of the most significant things that we have been involved in over the past decade. And we're going to have a poll question on that a little later. There's been some announcements about troop withdrawals being sooner than expected. And I want to get your feedback and get your input on that as well. So we're going to start with some questions here. And I think we've got Stan in Norton Shores. Stan, are you there with us?
Yes, I am.
Hey, sir, how are you tonight?
Good, how are you?
We're doing all right. Glad we could spend a couple of minutes with you. So go ahead with your question, Stan.
Well, this gas raising all the time and this and that. Boy, I wish we could have got raises back when we worked, 25 cent, 30 cent raises. You got Michigan. You got all their... A lot of jobs we've lost around here, and I mean good jobs over stupidness from the Republicans, right?
I'm not sure it's just been us Republicans, but go ahead.
Well, I'll rephrase that. I didn't mean to say it that way. I mean against all of them. Okay? It's not fair. I mean, you got people out there for crying out loud that's homeless and all this and that. And why don't they take care of the people here?
Yep.
Quit raising the gas prices and the people, quit lying to the people that there's a oil spill or whatever when there's not. We got plenty of oil. Why lie to them? That's my gripe.
All right, that's great, Stan. I appreciate that, and you lead nicely into what's going to be one of our first poll questions here shortly. But I do need to make one quick announcement here. We've got a number of people jumping on the line. This is United States Representative Bill Huizenga on a live telephone town hall meeting here with you all. We've got a call dialing across the district. And we've literally reached thousands of people already tonight. Stan is on the line with a question about gas prices and also jobs in Michigan and why we're getting hit the hardest, Michigan, in many ways. And so I'm going to answer that a little bit, Stan, and then we're going to do our poll question in just a moment. So you're right. It's been very frustrating as a parent to, as a husband trying to figure out the family budget when we're seeing gas prices continue to go up and continue to go up, energy in general. Stan, you are representing a few calls here that we have on the line, people asking about gas prices. They're frustrated about how they fluctuate so often. And there's a number of things. I think, as Stan, you put it, we need to have people quit lying about the energy availability and what's happening. And I wholeheartedly agree. I think everybody deserves an open, honest, genuine, real answer about those things. And one of the key elements for me is energy availability. We've got a very safe source of energy in Canada. The Canadians are very friendly, obviously, to the United States. They want to ship us the oil equivalent of everything that Venezuela produces every day. All right, we can replace what Venezuela puts on the world market by what our friends in Canada want to ship us on the Keystone Pipeline. And unfortunately, the president has decided to literally, he has said he was going to put off that decision until after the election. and there is the EPA has approved this project. It is waiting because it's an international project coming from Canada. It needs approval from the State Department. He's requested the State Department to hold off on that, and he has decided that he is not going to make a decision. I think that's a tragedy because there's immediate jobs that would go into construction. It's estimated that there would be 20,000 direct construction jobs, including in Michigan. There's a pipeline that comes across to a refinery in Detroit. They are in the process of upgrading that pipeline right now to take some of that, they call it tar sands crude, and oil sands crude, and get it refined in Michigan. And I think it's a tragedy for the American economy and the American workers that we are going to see this oil get shipped to Asia, because the Canadians are going to be pulling it out of the ground. One way or the other, they're pulling it out of the ground. And I don't blame them. They need to make some money as well. And China wants this oil. And to me, it's a simple equation of whether we are going to help fuel the recovery of the United States economy, or whether we are going to fuel the economy of our economic rivals. And that is just an absolute tragedy. So before we get too far into it, I need to do a couple of quick announcements. We've got a number of people that are joining this call. This is United States Representative Bill Huizenga on a live telephone town hall meeting with you. We want to hear from you tonight. If you have a question, please feel free to dial 0. You'll be put into a queue with a staff member of mine, either here in Washington or in Michigan, and they will take your question. If you are interested in receiving our electronic newsletter, our e-newsletter on email, please press 7 now and leave us your email. This is not going to get sold. It won't be used for any other kind of marketing purposes. This is purely for you to communicate with our office and for us to communicate with you. That's the only way that it will be used. It won't be used for any political purposes or anything like that as well. So with that, we're going to start our first poll question. It's called an instant poll. And with that, the question tonight is, we're going to have a series of questions, but this first question is, do you support the construction of the Keystone Pipeline? So the question is, do you support the construction of the Keystone Pipeline? Press 1 if yes, 2 if no, or 3 if you need more information and don't feel like you have enough information on that. So again, the question tonight, first question tonight is, do you support the construction of the Keystone Pipeline? Press 1 for yes, 2 for no, or 3 if you feel like you need to have more information about it. And we actually do have some information on our website. If you want to get more information, feel free to call any of our offices as well. You can sign up for our e-newsletter. We carry information on that as well. So with that, I wanted to get to very quickly to Stan's second part of his question, which was about jobs in Michigan. And I agree that Michigan has been hit like no other state. I saw this when I spent 6 years in Lansing as a state representative. Certainly over the last number of years, it's been very difficult in manufacturing. My family is involved in construction. My dad and my uncle had started a ready-mix concrete company that my cousins now own. I own our sand and gravel supply pit, and it's been a tough number of years. My background's in real estate and construction, and it's been brutal. I think, though, that Michigan is uniquely situated for the recovery because we had businesses that had to make some very difficult decisions, had to recalibrate and figure out how they were going to find a path forward that would allow them to remain in business and be successful. And frankly, it's the story of what government needs to do. We need to look back and figure out what we do best and how we are going to provide those services to people without taking more of their hard-earned tax dollars. Hard-working Americans expect us to use their dollars efficiently and effectively, and I try to live up to that. So Stan and others, we're working on trying to make sure that there's energy availability. We're trying to make sure that we are creating an atmosphere that's going to create those private sector jobs. That is ultimately a key in that. And then again, how we're using your tax dollars. So I do have one thing I had someone just point out to me, from Linda from Holland. And Linda, I think you've got kind of a follow-up call on that question about the Keystone Pipeline. And again, for those of you that are joining us, we're doing an instant poll question. The question is, do you support the construction of the Keystone Pipeline? Press 1 for yes, 2 for no, 3 if you need more information. And Linda, go ahead with your question.
Yes, thank you. I pressed 3 because certainly the way you presented it, it'd be a no-brainer to say, yes, let's do it. I'm kind of curious because I've not followed this issue. Why is he waiting? I mean, what's his concern with saying go? Do you know?
Yep, I do actually. Originally when this was proposed through Nebraska, the route of the pipeline was going to be going over an aquifer that some had expressed some concern about the sensitivity of the aquifer, that if there was a spill, that it could affect drinking water. The governor, a Republican governor in Nebraska, had raised that concern. There was a Republican colleague of mine here in the House of Representatives who had also expressed that concern. The Canadians actually went to work with the governor of Nebraska and with others to say, we'll change the route of the pipeline. And they have been in the process of buying the right-of-way to go around that area, even though this area does have other pipelines that run through it. They, and quite honestly, having dealt with the Canadians a bit, this is a very Canadian way of going about it. They try to build consensus. Kind of that American way would be to pound away at it. Oh, yeah, we'll see you in court. And, we tend to be kind of sue happy. But they said, okay, we want to work with you. This is such an important project. We'll find a different route. In fact, the day after the president announced that he was not going to make a decision, the governor of Nebraska was on television saying there is no reason for the president to hold this up, and he needs to move forward. Quite honestly, Linda, my read on this is the president has two very powerful but conflicting constituencies in this discussion. One is the radical environmentalists. The other, though, is the union construction side. These tend to be union jobs that are going to be built. And I'll tell you that there's a lot of tension in between those two groups right now, where you've got some that believe we need to be off of any form of fossil fuel, whether it's coal, whether it's oil, whether it's gasoline, anything like that. And we need to be off of that. And they don't want to see any kind of increase in capacity. And then you've got the number of pipe fitters and carpenters and all kinds of different unions like that saying, hey, wait a minute, these are good-paying, solid jobs here in the United States. Why would we continue to build pipelines in foreign countries? This is a bad idea. So that trying to be just sort of even and upfront about that, that is the question that has been presented in front of the president. And at that point, that's when he said he was going to make a decision after the election. And that to me is an abdication of responsibility. I'm here in Washington to make some tough decisions, not on a timeline based on an election, but on the needs of the U.S. and of the citizens like you and me as we're looking at these things. So appreciate that, Linda, and hopefully we're gonna ask it one last time here. If anybody wants to get in, this is U.S. Rep. Bill Huizinga doing a live telephone town hall. We have an instant polling question. Do you support the construction of the Keystone Pipeline? Press 1 for yes, 2 for no, or 3 if you need more information. So, again, 1 for yes, 2 for no, or 3 if you need more information. We are going to go on, I think, to another issue. We've got actually this has prompted quite a few comments and questions in there about the pipeline. This is something that has seen a lot of press. and is very important. And I think it's important for the U.S. recovery of the economy. I think it's important for our energy independence. And as the president said in the State of the Union, this was his quote. In fact, I wrote it down. I've got my notes in front of me from the State of the Union. We need to have a future where we control our own energy. The Keystone Pipeline is a logical place to go for that. And frankly, if we are if we're talking about getting energy from our friends versus those who tend to be our enemies, I would much rather go with our friends and work with the Canadians on that. So, well, we're going to move on to another issue here. Again, we've got a number of questions on that. But we also want to point out that if you have an issue with anything from the Veterans Affairs, Social Security, anything like that, please press zero, and we'll get you into the queue. You can also feel free to call one of our offices tomorrow, Holland, Muskegon, and Cadillac, or hear us in Washington, and we will make sure that those phone numbers, if you go to our website, those phone numbers are available, and I will announce them as well in a short bit. So, sorry, one second. I just need to take a look at what some of our next questions are. Also, if you are interested in emailing me directly, you can go to heisinga.house.gov/contactme. And we'll be able to do that. So why don't we go to we've got another question here from Kevin, I believe, from Hudsonville, wanting to know about some spending issues. So Kevin, are you there with us?
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Hey, we're doing all right. And if you've got us on speakerphone, if you don't mind taking us off, so that way
yeah, I just did that. Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. Go ahead with your question.
I was just wondering about the spending that's going on in Washington and the president asking for another 1.2. And I think we're getting sick of that Washington running up this huge debt that our children and grandchildren are going to have to pay off. And I'm wondering, in November, if a Republican's in office of the presidency, are you guys really going to do something, or is it going to be the same old song and dance?
Yeah, it's a great question, and a question I hear frequently. And again, as I had said before, I think people are looking for real, honest answers and solutions to what's going on. And Kevin, I can tell you this: that speaking for myself and my House colleagues, we are trying to do that. Now, the problem is we have three legs to the legislative process: the House of Representatives, the U.S. Senate, and the Presidency. And we have to have agreement for a bill to pass. A perfect example is the fact that it has been over 1,000 days, 3 years, since the U.S. Senate has passed a budget. This is a basic step that needs to happen for us as families, for me as a small business owner, and I know there's so many others, for anyone who owns a large business, for local government, the state government. And frankly, it's baffling as to why people think that somehow the federal government is exempt from this. It sets the parameters for all of our other spending. And I can tell you, Paul Ryan, our chairman of the Budget Committee, has been working very hard. We had a process last year where we went through a very open process that took days and days on the floor. And we ended up with a budget. Some people called it the Ryan budget, Paul Ryan budget, or the House budget. We passed that. It had some tough medicine in there for these things, but the Senate refused to take it up. And interestingly, the Senate rejected the president's budget, and then it rejected the House budget, but didn't propose its own budget, which is just absolutely crazy. That isn't how this is supposed to work. This is kind of like Schoolhouse Rocks type stuff. The House passes a bill, the Senate passes a bill, and on those points that they disagree, they go to something called a conference committee, and when they hash those out, it gets voted on and passed on to the president. And I think it's been a shame and a complete dereliction of duty that the Senate has not made those difficult choices. Now, having said all that, we did not get into this situation of $15 trillion in debt overnight. We aren't going to get out of this overnight. And just to put everything in perspective for everybody, we have about $2.5 trillion, with a T, trillion dollars in income that comes in. We're spending about $3.7 trillion of money in the budget. Now, it gets confusing because you start hearing trillions and billions, but let's put this a little simpler. Let's say that a family is making $25,000 a year, all right? That's the $2.5 trillion. Let's call that $25,000. But they are spending $37,000 a year. That's the $3.7 trillion that we're spending. $25,000 in income, but we're spending $37,000, and we've got almost $150,000 in credit card debt. Now, we have got to get that spending under control. And ultimately, what will do that is having to deal with some of the entitlements. Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are the three largest drivers of our debt. And we're going to have to deal with those. It's a reality. Now, we've got a number of folks that are on this call who in all likelihood are tapped into the Medicare and Social Security programs. I think we have a moral and social obligation to not change that on people like my father, who just turned 90. We're not going to change the, who's a World War II vet. We're not going to change the game, the rules of the game on someone like my dad or maybe your mom or your grandmother. We're not going to change the rules on them right now. But I'm 43, just turned 43 this week. I've got a long time yet. I've got about 25 years of working, and I've got to make some adjustments. I think that's only fair. My kids, who range in age from 14 down to 5, they're going to have a very long life, life expectancy of 100 years maybe, they're going to have to make some adjustments. So we have to deal with those issues as part of a long-term solution. So, Kevin, as you're talking about this, there's sort of two halves to this coin. One is what those immediate expenses are. How much are we spending on various programs like highways or Medicare immediate medical needs, Defense Department, Energy Department, all of those different things. And then there's those long-term issues like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. So we're very serious about it. We do need different negotiating partners in the Senate and in the presidency to make significant headway, in my opinion. So appreciate that. I do want before we go to our next question, I wanted to make sure that we announce the results of that last poll, which was, do you support the construction of the Keystone Pipeline? We had 68% of you say yes, you do. 12% of you say no, you do not. And 20% of you saying you weren't sure, you didn't have enough information. So 68% saying yes, you support it. 12% no, you don't. And 20% saying you needed to know a little more information. The other thing, Kevin, and others who have similar questions on this, we have to talk about fiscal restraint. We have to lead by example. And just this week, we voted on freezing all federal employee pay, including my own pay, members of Congress, staff, and other agencies. And I want to do a quick poll question on that. Do you agree with a federal employee pay freeze, including members of Congress, staff, and the various agencies? Do you believe that that's a good idea? Press 1 for yes if you agree that it is, 2 for no, you don't believe that is, or 3 if you need some more information. And again, we'll try to get that information out on our website as well. So, again, the question is, do you agree with the federal employee pay freeze, including members of Congress, their staff, all the agencies that are out there? Do you believe that that's a good idea to freeze or pay? This is actually after a pay freeze last year as well. Press 1 for 1 for yes, 2 for no, or 3 for more information. And just as a reminder to everybody, since I've gotten into office here in this past year, we have actually cut out of our budget 11.5%. Those were cuts that were instituted in two phases right after being here, and we've had to adjust. We actually have not filled all of our staff slots. We had a staff member leave and go to World Vision, a great organization, and we made the decision to spread her work out to the other staff members. We've got some very, very hardworking staff in Washington, as well as our three district offices in Holland and Muskegon and Cadillac. And I want to say thank you to those staff members. They're serving you. They're making sure that you are having your government work for you, not against you. But we also had an opportunity, and we'll be making this announcement with some specifics soon, of returning money to the U.S. government from our office budget, and we're tagging that directly towards deficit reduction. It's not going to be anything that's going to turn that around instantly, but if we have all of our offices do that, that is a step in the right direction. So, again, one more time, do you agree with the federal employee pay freeze, including members of Congress, their staff, and agencies? Press 1 for yes, 2 for no, or 3 if you need some more information on that. And again, we're trying to use the hardworking taxpayers' money in a way that I'd use my own and be smart about it. So appreciate that input from you all. So with that, it looks like this is pretty overwhelming and not a big surprise from my end. We have 86% of you saying yes, you do agree with that pay freeze. 7% of you saying no, you do not, and 8% saying you need some more information. So we will we'll try to get specific information on that up on our website as well. So I wanted to talk briefly about Afghanistan and my trip to Afghanistan two weekends ago. It was a very informative trip, something that I needed to do and wanted to do to say, number one, thank you to our men and women in uniform for what they're doing. Two, to get a real sense and feel on the ground what's happening there. It's very complicated with the coalition and what's been happening. There's been an announcement that Leon Panetta, the Secretary of Defense, has made with the White House backing that up. Originally, the coalition troops were going to stay through 2014. There was an announcement by Leon Panetta that the goal has now been moved up to 2013. The French have announced after they had a horrible situation where they had an Afghan army soldier turn his weapon on four French troops and kill them. That was a huge tragedy, and we're trying to deal with the place that was the birthplace of Al Qaeda. This was truly a coalition. When I was over there, I happened to be in Kabul, and then in a place in Helmand Province, which is down in the south. We were at a place called Camp Leatherneck, run by the Marines, as you can imagine. And then we were in Kandahar, where we met with the 82nd Airborne and where the Army and the folks over in the southeastern part of Afghanistan. I carry a challenge coin with me every day now that was given to me by a sergeant major from Michigan who was from Gladwin, and it is a daily reminder as I carry that around in my pocket of those brave young men and women who are there for us. A number of them have done tours both in Iraq and in Afghanistan. The interesting observation that that I heard consistently is that they are more optimistic about Afghanistan than, frankly, they were about Iraq. And it's because, as one of them put it, he said, we had difficulty moving the Iraqis to the front. When we were telling them that they needed to help organize the operations and execute those operations, we had to really push them. The Afghans are coming up naturally. They are saying, we want to lead. We want to organize this. And in fact, when we were there, the Afghans were very proud, and the coalition troops were very pleased that they had just done their first major operation all by the Afghans. The Afghan National Army, the ANA, had organized, planned, and executed a major operation down in Helmand Province, and that was one of the areas of the surge, both in Kandahar and in Helmand Province, and so that was some real progress. So I'm gonna ask this question now, and that question is: do you agree with the earlier than previously announced troop withdrawal from Afghanistan? If you agree with that, please press 1. Please press 2. If you do not agree with that, pulling out our troops earlier than 2014, or 3, if you need more information. So again, the question is, do you agree with the earlier than previously announced troop withdrawal? We had announced that we would be withdrawing troops by the end of 2014. That has been announced that that will be moved up to end of 2013 from Afghanistan. If you agree with that, please press 1. Press 2 if you do not agree with that, or 3 if you need more information. And as I said, that was a very quick trip. We left on Thursday, my commercial airline, and into the Middle East area, and then we took a military transport into Kabul, and spent 2 days in Kabul and Kandahar and Helmand Province. And I got to tell you, regardless of what you think about the policies that brought us into the war or policies of staying there, we can all be proud of those young men and women in uniform. And I had the privilege of having breakfast on Saturday with a guy who had retired from the military but was now a defense contractor dealing with energy issues and from Ludington. And then on Sunday, I had the pleasure of having breakfast with a Marine Corps lieutenant colonel who is also from Ludington. Turns out they live about 5 miles apart and didn't know that each other was in country. So we've got a lot to be proud of with our young men and women in uniform. So again, one last time, as we ask this question, do you agree with the earlier than previously announced troop withdrawal? We had announced that we were going to withdraw troops at the end of 2014. Secretary of Defense has just announced that he's moving that up to the end of 2013 out of Afghanistan. So press 1 if you agree, yes, that is the right move. 2, if no, you do not believe that that's the right thing to do. Or 3, if you need more information, and we're happy to get that. So, we're going to ask one last time as well. If you are interested in receiving our electronic newsletter, our e-newsletter, please dial 7 right now, and we will get you on our list. We don't sell the list. We don't use the list politically. We don't use the list for anything other than communicating with you about the official goings-on here in the 2nd District. It's an honor and a privilege to serve you. We want to give you and deliver to you the best information that you can possibly get. In fact, we won an award at the end of last year for our website. It's called a Silver Mouse Award, and that is given out to outstanding websites. And we are very pleased to have that. So got some questions that are coming up. So I need to just take a glance here at the computer screen. The So I'm sorry, we've got it's kind of a specific one, but I think this is a great question, very timely, and I think we're going to go to Glenn here. Glenn, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Go ahead and ask your question.
I'm going to get you off the speakerphone just a minute.
All right, great. Thank you.
Okay.
Just my easier for everybody.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's easier for people to hear that way.
I understand that. But it wasn't easier for me to sit here and listen.
Okay.
The reason what I asked was originally was the Federal Forest Service,
yes,
closing all of these forests in Michigan. Not only in Michigan, I guess this is happening throughout the country. And for all intent and purposes, they completely take access away for people to use the forest as they always have. I'm 73. I like to hunt out there. I like to hike out there. I like to walk out there. But they came in and destroyed the trails in the U.S. forest, which this is the Manistee National Forest here that I'm talking about.
Yep.
By doing this, they've injured our economic situation here in Newaygo County and Lake County. People don't come here anymore. They don't come to hunt. They don't come to enjoy the forest.
Mm-hmm.
To my understanding, this would be taxpayers' property, and I don't believe that the Federal Forest Service or the people that are dictating to them have the right to do that, and especially.
Yep. Well, we've got some news for you, Glenn. And this just was announced on Tuesday. The U.S. Forest Service has decided to allow hunting and snowmobiling in the Huron-Manistee National Forest because of the comment period, the awareness that we helped to raise. Myself and Dave Camp and Dan Beneshek had worked very hard on this. In fact, last year, some may recall, I did a snowmobile tour through the Huron National Forest, Huron Manistee National Forest, to bring some awareness to that issue, because they were talking about closing down some critical trailheads and preventing access, not allowing hunting, not allowing snowmobiles onto those trails. And that decision, I think, is one that is very positive for our communities, both on the tourism side as well as citizens just enjoying the recreation. So, very timely on your question there, and we were quite pleased that happened. So, thanks, Glenn. We appreciate that, and we'll keep fighting to make sure that people have that access. That, as you point out, that is a very important thing. Along that vein, I am working on a bill has been introduced that would clarify what the access is in the Sleeping Bear Dunes National Forest. A number of years ago, about 9 years ago, as a matter of fact, the federal government had come in and was talking about making it a totally access-free holding. And there's literally county roads through it. People have lived there. There's a canoe liveries. There's all these different businesses that are in there. And it would have ended any ability for them to function. And Peter Hoekstra and Dave Camp and Senator Carl Levin have been working on that. I picked that up and have been working with those other two offices. and our bill has had a hearing in subcommittee. But the goal is to provide certainty about the access. I think that's very important that people are able to access that those recreational opportunities. So appreciate that. And we're gonna switch gears here. I've got Colleen who's got I assume some criticism of me and wants to make a point. So Colleen, go ahead. Are you there?
Thank you, Bill.
Yes, I am.
Yep. Thank you, Glenn,
for having this. I just want to say my question is that why is it that you continue to vote along party lines? And when, you know, we are trying to fix this budget deficit, and we do have so many problems that we've got in our country with the budget, why can't we go and tax those that can afford it? Why did you vote against that 0.5% tax on people that make over $1 million? And, you know, and instead you're pursuing this idea that we need to be cutting funding for Medicare and Medicaid for future recipients.
Well, I appreciate that that perspective, and there's quite a bit to fill in between. This, we're not talking about cutting Medicare and Medicaid, first of all. Second of all, that if we are going to have these programs long-term, they need to be restructured. And for people like myself, early 40s, my kids, we are going to have to figure out a different system. What I believe needs to happen is we need to have tax simplification. I, for one, am a proponent of the flat tax, all right? And I would love to make sure that Warren Buffett and his secretary pay the same amount, at least the same amount, right? We can do that by a flat tax system. We can also get at this in a slightly different way, and I think there is growing consensus on this, and certainly it's a proponent that I've been a proponent of this position for my tenure both in the state legislature and now here in Congress. We have got to cut through this layer cake of loopholes and tax credits and all these other things. And I thought it was interesting. I actually agreed with the president in his State of the Union address when he was talking about that simplification. And I believe it needs to be a flatter, fairer tax system. What concerned me, though, then, is he was proposing additional tax credits, specifically into manufacturers and into some other programs that really contradicted what he was just saying about having a system where those loopholes and those tax credits were being taken away. So we have got to figure out a way to deal with a couple of things. One is our current spending levels. We've got to get that under control. The revenue that is coming in can be raised a couple of different ways. One is just by taxing people more. Most economists believe, though, that is a short-term, at best, solution for revenue. The most surefire way of raising revenue, and I'm all for raising revenue, is through growth. We've got to get people back to work. We've got to make sure that job providers are healthy. And that they are able to make sure that they're going to make those decisions that allow them to go be prosperous, not as individuals, but as an entity who's providing good-paying jobs. And that is really my goal, trying to make sure that we've got an environment that is beneficial to everybody who is involved in that. So we are going to have to then, once we get our revenue and our expenditures on a short term figured out, we have to deal with that $15 trillion deficit that has been amassed over the last numbers of years. And it's been administrations on both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats. It's been generational, frankly, that this has been going on. And I have a chart where I'm going to make sure that we have this chart up and available on the website that shows the percentage of GDP that each of the presidents has the percentage of GDP that's been spent towards government. And unfortunately, we've seen in the last couple of years just a huge spike in that. And it really comes down to kind of the philosophical disagreement of whether we would be better off or worse off if we had spent more on stimulus. And, you know, the president believes that the stimulus spending wasn't enough and that we've had economic doldrums because of that. I happen to think that the spending that we did was not effective for spurring on the economy. And those were very short-term solutions that really don't bring any kind of long-term stability. So appreciate that question, Colleen, and appreciate you being on the call tonight and doing this. So
all right.
Sounds like Glenn, you're still on as well. Somehow we had two people on the line there. So. All right, we've got time for one last question, but I do want to say if you have a question or comment, you may stay on the line, you'll go into a voicemail, and we will then answer your voicemail. We want to make sure that we are responsive to you. So I've got time for one more last question. We do want to say thank you for joining us. We didn't get to your question. Please stay on the line and follow us. We'd love to have you follow us at heisinga.house.gov is our website. You can follow me on Twitter. If you go to twitter.com/RepHeisinga, email me through our website, or feel free to call our district offices in Michigan or here in Washington, D.C. They are in the phone book, and if you got an old phone book, we kept the exact same addresses and phone numbers as Peter Hoekstra. It actually saved tens of thousands of dollars when we made that transition by doing that. So with that, we're going to we're looking right up at the top here. It looks like somebody just had hung up. So we're going to go with something else that is a little different direction. I think we've got Neil in Twin Lake. Neil, are you there?
Hello.
Hello, Neil.
Hello.
Yes
sir. Sure. Neil.
All right. Go ahead with your question.
Thanks for having me on. My question, Mr. Heisinga, is about the Fast and Furious scandal that's been unfolding for quite some time. I'm sure you're aware of it.
Yeah, very aware of it. Very very familiar.
Okay. I'm wondering, my question is split. It's how and why can this possibly happen along with the question of the agent's credibility, not the people in charge so much, they're discredited, but the agents and their oaths. How are these people allowed to function in this system? And who's in charge?
And Neil, I want to stop you right there 1 second, because I just want to make sure everybody's up to speed on what this is. And for those of you listening, the Fast and Furious program was a Department of Justice program that brought illegal guns into the system, and the idea was that they were going to track these guns to try to track criminals and to use that information to break up drug rings and other things. The problem was there was a border guard, someone who had worked on the southern border, who was killed,
Brian Terry.
Exactly right. Yep. And Mr. Terry was killed, and at the scene, two of those guns that the U.S. government had put into the system were used in that killing. And Attorney General Holder has been in the news. In fact, today. I believe it was today. Today and tomorrow, yesterday, sort of bleed together a little bit. I believe it was today. There was discussion of another subpoena. He has ignored the first congressional subpoena. Darrell Issa, who is the chairman of the Oversight and Investigations Committee, has been working very diligently on this, as have a number of other people. We've been following this very closely. Frankly, it's outrageous. It was bad judgment going into this. The bad judgment has become an outrage when they have seemed to stonewall on getting information out about this. Today, Attorney General Holder was trying to deny that he was covering up any of the information. And there's just growing consensus, I think, in the general public that this program was allowed to move forward, and we had a U.S. citizen lose his life because of it. And not all life is important, but he was a law enforcement officer, Mr. Terry, and that is just egregious and not acceptable. So. We're going to continue to move ahead on that Fast and Furious issue. We'll be watching that very closely, and appreciate Neil your question on that. So again, if you are interested, please stay on the line, and we will be answering your questions. You stay on the line, and you can leave me a voicemail at the end, and I or my staff will get back to you as soon as we possibly can. We appreciate your time. It means a lot to me that you would take this time to spend with us for the past hour. It's hard to believe it's been an hour. We have got a lot of questions and issues that we are dealing with here in Washington. The budgets will be coming out. The president's budget will come out on February 13. I have sponsored a piece of legislation called the Honest Budget Act, which I believe is very important. We encourage you to go to my website and learn more about that. We are going to be seeing also activity on the Medicare reimbursements, the payroll tax cut that we've all been benefiting from, and the unemployment insurance situation. That will be getting dealt with here in the next couple of weeks. So, again, thank you very much. This is U.S. Congressman Bill Huizinga saying thank you, and we hope you have a great night and you join us again soon.